There he is. I see him.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Debugging for Live. Teo, do we have you on the line? Oh. Teo, I think there's a problem with your phone. Can you try with another phone?
Maybe it's his phone.
Yeah.
Wonder if he's using a home phone or a cell phone.
Yeah. Mary, can you text him and let him know what's going on? Hey, we can't hear you. Okay. Okay.
Whoa.
Hello?
No.
Okay. Mary, can you try calling him and letting him know his phone is messed up?
What's that?
Can you call him or email him? Or, yeah, get a hold of him and let him know his phone's messed up.
Okay. Okay. Let me see if I can get a hold of him. Hold on.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, there's problems with Blog Talk Radio today, so we're going to try to get Taylor back on. Of course, he's the only caller today that we've had a problem with. But we have Annie. We have Annie here.
Hello.
And we have Rose call screening.
Hello.
Hello. Okay, I see Teo call back in. Let's see if this one's working. Teo? Wow, this is really bad. Oh, there's another call. Let's see if it tries someone. Okay. Teo? Hello? Oh, boy. One of those nights on Blog Talk Radio. Boy, they can hear it from me today. So, hang in there, everybody. We'll get them on.
Yeah, we were just talking before we came on air that what they were saying today, that they were getting staticky calls.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, would be great timing.
I know. Yeah, he's the only one. Okay, well, let's see. We'll try it again. Hello, Teo. Teo? I don't hear anything on that one. Weird.
Hello.
Hello, Teo. Hey. Yes. Thank goodness.
There you are.
Is this Carrie?
Yes. This is Carrie, yes. We have Anna here.
Hi, Teo.
Hi. Oh, okay. We got through then.
Yes. We couldn't hear you at all. Could you hear us?
Yeah, I could hear you saying you better call him to tell him it's not going through.
Here?
Hi.
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 So how are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Fantastic. We're glad to have you on.
Yeah, good to be on. I've just been studying lines. I'm feeling rather religious.
Oh. Heard you were talking about love before.
Oh, God, I've been talking about everything today.
I know.
So do we have any people?
Of course.
Oh, of course. Well, you're going to tell us about what you've been doing lately?
Are we live now?
Yes,
oh,
we are.
Yeah.
We're on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, yeah. I just came an hour ago. I just had a 2-hour meeting with the editor. First time I was meeting her, and she was very, it was interesting. I took her my book, which is rather, you know, thick in pages, and she loves the stories a lot, and it makes a big difference when you're facing somebody who's just read your book and suddenly they meet you and suddenly it all comes together about what the passion in the book is all about. And it was so funny because it's the first thing I've really written. And so I said, she said, I love your writing. And she said, it's so passionate. And the way I'm listening to the way you're speaking is the way you write. And
oh.
So that was good. And so I told her I was doing a chapter on days. And she said, because in some of the stories, you know, I make some judgments on things, especially about the looting in the 19th century where the British and the Germans and the French stole so much art from especially classical cultures. And she said, are you okay about making opinions about... I said, well, they're facts. It's not like I'm making it up. I said, you know, but the book about looting... So I said, no, I said, I'm fine about it. So she said, and what about days? How do you feel about that? I said, well, you know, I'm saying the truth about certain things. I'm not, when I mention certain actresses, I don't say who they are. I just say an actress. I don't, you know, if I mention Alison Sweeney, for instance, I just say an actress. Or if I mention, I do talk about James. I do talk about Joe Moscolo and Deirdre Hall. I haven't come to the Leanne thing because that'll be a longer part of the chapter. I'm trying to... It's interesting. She couldn't believe how much I remembered in those 20 years of traveling. And she says, did you write these things out? I said, no, what I decided to do last year, because I usually travel every year. And I said, last summer I decided to stay and travel just in my mind. And I was amazed by what I remembered. And... because my journeys are not simple, and because a lot of, you know, antagonistic and also threatening situations from secret police in, say, places like Syria or the Hezbollah in Lebanon, you know, I talked about those things because they were real incidents. I didn't have to make those things up.
Right.
Right.
You know,
you go
so,
looking for adventure.
You know. Yeah, they're unique adventures, and because they are my adventures, I remember them really well. And unless you really start thinking about it, she couldn't believe I wrote that entire book with two fingers. I'm just not a typist. As my friend Jack Betts, who came, he said, he's watching while I'm typing, he said, even my nephews were laughing at me, and they said, I cannot believe you wrote the entire book with those two fingers.
Do you peck away at the keyboard? Because that's how my husband does it too. He doesn't know how to write. But
and
he does fine.
And sometimes my mind races ahead, and I have to be careful of that. But no, you know it's. And then I'm going to write. I'll finish the day's chapter once I finish the film, and then I'll get on to a chapter called. I mean, I've called, as you know, the chapter on days is called Dodging Bullets, but. the editor, she said to me, I want you, she says, you've met so many famous people and that have crossed your path. So I've called it Along the Path because it is a spiritual book in a way. But she loved the chapters on my family because they're very real and deep, whereas the others are just incidences and how I got out of them or how I got into them. And so it'll be like 24, 25 chapters.
Oh, you're such a natural storyteller, too, that I just, I'm dying to read this book. I'm excited.
Yeah.
When we were speaking, she did say that she said, you're such a storyteller. You should be doing this in the theater, standing in front of an audience. And I said, well, I did that in Cape May a few years ago. And I found that people actually listen to the stories. Nobody got up to go to the bathroom. They all stayed for 2.5 hours. They loved asking questions after I finished the journey. So that's how the idea of the book came.
makes sense.
On your days chapters, how many different stories did you tell in your days? How many, do you remember how many different incidents or experiences you told within the days chapter?
Well, you know, because it is a book about journeys, originally she said to me, you know, you should do a book on, you should do a story on days because of how many years you spent there. And I said, you know, I'm kind of reluctant to go there because I can't say that all the experiences were great. Some of the people I worked with were terrific. Some were not. But I thought, well, you know what? It was days that paid for all these journeys. So, you know, that's how the book idea. And so I start the story in Cuba.
Where it all went down.
We remember the Cuba. We remember what happened in Cuba.
Yeah, we remember the call. Yeah.
You do?
No. There's a lot of stuff that happened in Cuba, I bet. A
lot of stuff. You know, even when the police, the secret, I always get in trouble with secret police. I no matter where I go, they always think, oh, who is this guy? And I don't know what it is about my persona, but they all think, spy, terrorist. And so I thought, well, you know, I'll start it there because I got into a religion called Santeria and about what they call the Babalao, who is the priest, and the ceremony that took place and what he warned me about what was happening. I remember him saying to me when I had been cleansed, and I won't say how it, because that's in the book, but he did say to me that there was a knife in my back, and then 2 weeks later, you know, I was killed off.
Wow.
You got the call.
Wow. I loved how you described that you stayed home last summer and traveled in your mind. I love the way you said that. And, you know, it's kind of funny how, you know, when you have, at least with my limited experiences of traveling overseas and such, it's funny how you can compartmentalize those and you don't think about them for a while and you think you've forgotten, and then you'll run into someone that's been there and you start talking about it, and all of a sudden all those memories start coming back. So was that kind of like when you were writing the book, did you just find that more and more things were coming, you know, coming to your mind as you explored it? Or, I mean, you've had so many amazing adventures.
Well, having been to Egypt 10 times, I've been to Cuba 10 times. I wanted to go to Cuba because I wanted to find out what made a communist country non-believers, and did the people feel the same way? Because, you know, the Santeria religion came originally from Egypt. In ancient times, the pharaohs used to have their priests who used to conduct these ceremonies in order to find out or predict what the future was going to be. And then it went to Nigeria, and from there it crossed into the areas of Haiti and in the Caribbean and to Cuba, and that's where it stayed. And I wanted to find out what the religion was like there. And 95% of the people practice Santeria in Cuba, as well as being Catholic. But when I'd go into a Catholic church, it all looked rather morbid. It was all about martyrs. And so the icons and the statues, you know, there were bleeding, or there was an arrow, or something that was rather dramatic. So instead of going to church and feeling revelation, I kind of felt there was a real sadness. So then when I went to the Santeria, and the way they absorb the negativity that has been placed on you, like we all have, sometimes when we don't feel well, sometimes it's people's thoughts on you, or how people have sent negative vibrations towards you. You don't even know it, and sometimes people get sick from that, and they don't know why they got sick. So he was explaining that to me, and so they use a bird of some kind, and then the bird, as they go over their body, absorbs all the negativity, and then the next thing you know is the bird's dead from that negative energy. And that's what I found scary. I thought, wow, that's what I've been carrying around. And so, but it's used as a sacrifice. It's part of the religion. It's not. And if you were like, for instance, I said to him, so when this chicken that died, are you going to use it to eat? He goes, no, because there's so much negative energy that it absorbed. That's why it died. In others where it's just cleaning you out and it's not really negative, he will use the chicken for food later, depending on what the chicken has to absorb. And then what you do with the chicken is that you then take it with you, you take it out of the premises, and then you dump it somewhere. And I had the same experience here. I did with a babalao here, and I went to my favorite store, Ralph's, and I dumped the dead chicken in their disposal, you know. So it's, you know, it is, but you do feel different after you've had the ceremony. Now Marianne has read part of it, and it really was a phenomenal experience. And so all these stories and all these experiences, you know, as you said, when people travel, they come back, they forget about those experiences. For me, it's like when I asked my brother when he went to different countries in Europe, I said, oh, how was the journey? Thinking he's going to tell me some great stories. And all he said to me, he says, if I saw one more church, I was so bored. He said, I sat outside, said to my wife, you go in. Whereas for me, we have, you know, I have a different passion about it. And he had no stories to tell. So
Not
everybody takes a journey and brings back something with them. My philosophy is that when you leave your front door and you take a journey and you come full circle, something about you changes.
Mm. Oh, yeah, your experiences.
Mm-hmm. Your truth.
Wow. Anyway, so that's good, and so I've been studying lines, and I'm going to another church ceremony on Sunday at a Catholic church because I'm playing a priest of Catholicism, different to Greek Orthodox. Ceremonies are different.
Oh.
Is this a movie
coming up?
I start the movie next Thursday. My first scene is going to be with Doris Roberts.
Oh, and, wow. Her.
Yes. It's,
who else is in the movie? Can you tell us who else?
Eric Roberts.
Oh.
Eric Roberts is going to be there.
Oh, lovely.
There's a few well-known actors, but their contracts haven't sealed yet as far as signing, so I can't mention their names. But it's be a nice cast. I tried to bring Leanne into it, but that didn't work. I thought it would be great. Leanne,
oh, yeah.
And
we'd love to see you two reunited on screen.
I know. And then so the director didn't quite see Leanne as that character. The character is a very, the story basically is about, which really parallels what's happening today. The story is really about a young kid who's been bullied, and what he ends up doing is assassinating so many people. And so as the priest, I have to come in and console and help them find answers. And what happens at the end, it's about Christmas and about what Christmas means, the rebirth. And I liked what the priest said at the Catholic Church last week. He talked about resurrection. When the Christ had died on the cross and there was resurrection there, that nobody came fighting and killing people because of it. Everything, the resurrection was done very peacefully. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting today when people are sacrificed, then you see havoc take place afterwards. So it was interesting to see, because there was an article in the New York Times about it, and he was talking about how we don't follow the scriptures, that people don't know how to handle their anger and their rage and their judgments. And so this is a priest who's there because of what he's been through and the tragedy he's had before he became a priest, and how he learns from and finds faith. And therefore, by doing it, he was also an alcoholic. And so because of that those circumstances of having lost family, he's able to heal himself and then from it find some kind of faith and then bring some healing into his life. And so by doing that, I'm able to have the ability to do it for others. And so with Doris and Jack, I think Jack Betts is going to play her husband, which I think is great because they've been friends.
Oh.
But Jack doesn't
love
like
it.
Jack and Doris,
Jack and Doris. But and Eric Roberts is playing one of the policemen. And so it'll be interesting to play.
How's the young actor that plays the role that, you know, that kills all the people? I mean, how is he to work with? Or
I met him once.
Or haven't you?
We had a read-through last week, and he's okay. There's a young kid whose brother is the killer. Boy, I couldn't believe him. We had a reading here in my house yesterday, and the young kid is 12 years old. He comes in and puts his hands on his hips, and he looks around my house, and he goes, "Well, you've so certainly traveled a lot." And I looked at him, and I went, "Guys, for 12 years old." And then he looked at my Egyptian collection. He goes, "Well, you've been to Egypt as well." And I thought, where the hell did this brain come from? And his mother's sitting there because he's so young. And she's sitting there very proud. And then I find out her heritage is Greek. And so this kid is really smart, I must say. I mean, I don't know too many 12-year-olds would have that kind of chutzpah.
Oh, that's funny.
Right, right. Well, he's Greek, so there you go. That's part of it.
No, I can't say that it's about being Greek, because I know some Greeks who wouldn't look at themselves more as martyrs or learning how to screw you. You know, I was saying to somebody the other day, you know, I must say one thing about the Jewish people, they certainly take care of each other, whereas the Greeks, and they'll hate me for this, but I have found that they try to find ways of screwing you rather than helping you.
I wonder why that is. Well, that's an interesting
beware of Greek bearing gifts. You know, those way back,
experience. I think it's because, you know, because the Jewish people have had gone through so much trauma.
Right. Absolutely.
That they, you know, they're a tribe, and the only way they could live was to help each other and stick by each other. I mean, you look at the film industry here. I know people who get jobs because they're Jewish, and I understand that thought. Whereas with the Greeks, and I've met Greeks, and they, I mean, just like the Greeks I met in Greece when I was going over to do some series, and the first thing at the dinner table is, "How much money do you want?" I went, just money.
They cut right to the taste, yeah.
You know, so I would like to find, I would like to have somebody change that thought in my head. I'd like a Greek to come along to say, "I want to help you." And so I admire
that. That would be a smart Greek.
Yeah. Huh? That would be you, right?
Well, I've helped Greeks. I mean, you know,
right.
But they're always, I don't know what it is. It's in the character. I mean, if you look at what Greece is going through right now, I mean, it's chaos.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all those Greeks took all the money out of the economy and dumped it into Switzerland. I mean, billions of dollars. And whereas they... Somehow you go there and they're always arguing. I mean, I've never seen people argue the way Greeks do. They don't hit each other, but they're always arguing. And it's like you want to leave the drama. You know, let's face it, we did create it.
Yeah.
True.
You know, theater came from the Greeks. And
Greeks.
So then, and drama and betrayal. That's why you have a mask, you know. Anyway, so... That's what I've been doing. I mean, there's some other things going on that's really interesting now, especially with one of my scripts, and also that I certainly enjoyed shooting the film of the story of Esther. The only thing is, you know, they're a very Christian group, and Tilly, you know, Jen Tilly, she was lovely. She had a wonderful composure about her on set. She was great to work with. And the young kid who played the king didn't have a lot of experience. And so, you know, sometimes it's great. And most of the time you hope that the actors you're working with are going to challenge you or are better than you. But in most cases you find that, you know, I'm from the old school. The actors of today are not as trained as we were.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the training also with Dave. There was a lot of training there. I've had directors say to me, "Where did you get your training from?" Because you don't wait for a director to direct you. So because the business is so fast now, they want to hire actors who know what they're doing and so they can just move on.
Right. Did you say Jen Lilly is one of your co-stars on that one?
Yeah, she plays Esther.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And she's coming to days too now.
Yeah, she's coming to days.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's. Yeah, she was lovely, and we worked very well together. I had a wonderful dinner scene. And the costumes were very interesting, too. I mean, I had a beard that I always like wearing because it's so bloody itchy. And but still, the character was...
No beard in this movie, huh?
Not in this movie, uh-huh. Because if you... I studied up on Catholic priests. They don't have beards. Occasionally,
I know some that do, but yeah, you're probably right. The majority of them don't.
I look more like a Muslim, you know, from the Arab land.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I have a beard on for this priest in some Midwestern town in America, I don't think they're going to listen to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to look as, you know, and they called me... The name was Father Donahue. I said, I'm not a Father Donahue.
You're a Father Father De Mira. You should have been Father De Mira.
Yeah.
Father De Mira. That would have been
Father De Mira.
Yeah. Father Andre.
That's a nice ring to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll call myself Father Andre. Anyway, I think I'm calling myself. I always liked the name that I had on Mission Impossible, and that was Nicholas. So I'm calling myself Father Nicholas. Or Father Nick.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
That's
that.
Good. Yeah, I like that.
So, Teo, how does it feel to play a priest when you've played a nun?
Yes. I played priest before, too.
I just had a flashback to the folio.
Ooh.
And the vendetta.
Ugly nun, too, huh?
you know, one of the stories I will tell was when we were rushing and they were putting, when Andre was getting dressed in drag, and I looked at myself and I said to him, you're making me look like a hooker. And he, oh, no, you look fine. I said, look, so I went on set and the crew started to laugh, which was not encouraging to do the scene. And I saw there was a mirror in the hall, and I said to the director, I'd like to have a moment where I can stop in front of the mirror. He says, what for? And I said, you'll know when I say it. So he trusted me. So I stop and I catch myself in the mirror, and I look and I think, my goodness, you're an ugly broad. You look like some old hooker from Brazil. I thought I'd have the last laugh. You know, and in that particular day, I remember when we had a gym scene and these two guys were working out, you know, real macho, and they said to me, oh, you know, that girl over there is really a transvestite. And I said, oh, really? I said, yeah. And so about half an hour later, I went to get ready to play Andre in drag. And as I was coming by, I heard the two bodybuilders, one turn to the other and say, there's that hooker. There's a transvestite. And I went, they think I'm her.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my.
No, it was me in drag.
Oh, my goodness.
Let me tell you, that was the first and last time. There are some men that can get away with it. I can't.
It's true.
I just can't. And then I had to walk, and I thought, how the hell do women walk? Give me the right shoes.
See what
shoes.
We go through?
The right shoes, size 11, and I started to walk.
Oh, yeah, size 11.
I had to laugh at myself because I thought it was just so ridiculous. But listen, I've paid everything now, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Anyway, now that you have my news...
Well, Tay, I wanted to also mention to you, two weekends in a row, they had the SoapNet played classic GH, General Hospital, episodes going back from the beginning, and then over the years they played some of the highlights, some of the episodes that were big episodes and everything over the years to celebrate their 50th anniversary. And I was sitting there thinking, I just got caught up in it because that was the year, the 80s were when I watched, you know, the late 70s, early 80s is when I was watching GH back, you know, originally. I'm watching it again now. But And I was sitting there thinking, I wonder if Teo's going to pop up in any of this. And the very next episode, there you were. And it was on the island. I think it was everybody, you were on whatever the island was that the Cassadines were on. And you came out, and I was like, oh, my gosh, be still my heart. This is when I fell in love with Teo all those years ago. And the only problem I had with that episode was your shirt had no buttons. I was very, very disappointed in that. But other than that, it was wonderful to see you back then in the era in which I first fell in love with you.
thank you. But what do you mean it had no buttons?
It was just a sweat, like a sweater, your shirt had no buttons. It was just a pullover, basically.
Oh, I see.
And
I remember.
Like,
so you had too many clothes on, you mean?
It was a sweater. I think it was a sweater with just a regular neck. It didn't have any buttons. And we always joke about that last button on your shirt and how we hate it. But I was like, there's no buttons on this shirt. It's just it's all chest is covered. That's the only thing wrong with the episode.
Thank you. But, I used to remember John Delancey, who played Eugene. And
oh,
I
used
to go on the set, with my shirt open a lot. And he used to look at me because he could never do it. And he couldn't. And I kind of got away with it, and the producers liked it. They said, open it all up. And then John Delancey is saying to me one day, he says, well, why don't you open the bloody shirt all the way down? That way you'll have a perfect V, and we can see what your chest is really like in case we missed it. Well, from then on, even today, when I've seen shots with me with my shirt open as low as I had opened it, I used to think to myself, how the hell did I do that?
We're glad you did, though. We're glad you did.
Yeah, that was the only disappointment in the episode. I'm like, darn.
I was ahead of my time because look at today. Anytime people can take their shirt off or open their shirt off, it's all part of the sexual appeal.
Exactly.
In those days, they used to joke with me because everybody was so buttoned up, It was all very American and very Republican.
That's funny. But anyway, so it was fun to go back in time and see those original episodes where you first caught my eye, and then that's how I found Days. Was when you moved to Days, I discovered that you were on there because there was no internet back then in the dark ages of time. So we didn't know
When I finished, there were 30 actors who were hired for that summer storyline of the Ice Princess.
Uh-huh.
And I remember John Colicos, who was a Canadian actor, and I got along with him very well. And there was André Lanzard. And I remember that our story was coming to an end, and so the actors were all being called in by Gloria Monty, who was the executive producer. And she would say, the actor would go in, she says, okay, darling, it was very nice that you came for the summer story, but now it's come to an end. And I remember they would all come out, all hoping that they would be asked to come back. And André Lanzard went in, and we were sharing dressing rooms because it was too big a cast. And he came in crying, and I looked at him. I said, what's the matter? He said, I went to Gloria Monty, and she said to me, well, my darling, it's time for the end. And he said, but what about my fans? And she said, can I swear on here?
Sure.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
So she said to him, fuck your fans. He
sounds
couldn't
like her.
Believe it. He was so upset. He says, it's your turn. And so I go in. She goes, hello, darling, sit down. She says, you know how much we love you? And I said, that's nice. She says, we'd like to offer you a contract to come back. So when I go back, André says to me, so when do you finish? I said, no, they want me back. Well, that was so not.
Oh.
I was the only actor. Mm. And I remember that they said, you're going to go to prison for a few months, and then you'll come back as a regular. And I said, okay. But then Days approached me, and I remember there was an article that said, the one that got away, and go on to Days and not go to GH.
Wow.
And because, people have mentioned before about about my character coming back, and they said that I was too identifiable as Tony DiMera. But now that I've seen that with that interview that was there a couple of weeks ago in TV Guide, where the head writer said that that door is not closed, because now they're bringing back the Cassadines, and so I think they're going back into an era where it's, you know, rich and romantic and playful and diabolical, and so who knows? But
a lot of people remember you as Victor.
Huh?
A lot of people remember you as Victor. They talk, and you know, out on the online on Twitter, everybody talks about you know, still remembers you. Mm-hmm.
You know, I never worked with Elizabeth Taylor, but she was coming on, and I was going to come back, which I didn't. Mm-hmm. I remember when they had the big party, and Elizabeth Taylor walked in, and everybody stood up watching her entrance. And I thought, wow, Elizabeth Taylor, you know, here I am from this Australian boy, and looking up at Elizabeth Taylor, I thought, how do I meet her? So I remember she was sitting down with a group of friends talking away, and I went down on one knee at hello, and she looked at me and she said, well, hello. And I said, you play my sister-in-law, we haven't met. And I had 15 minutes with Elizabeth Taylor. I wasn't sure if she wanted me to get up and leave or stay. I didn't know what to do. So I was a gentleman about it. I didn't want to take up her time, but I did spend 15 minutes with her. So that's one of the chapters about, you know, along the path of the people that I met with.
Wow, that's cool.
You know, dancing with Ingrid Bergman and Anne Baxter and Dame Judith Anderson, having tea with Jacqueline Kennedy for an hour. I mean, so I'm putting all those stories, I'm putting all those stories in. Because in some way now I've lived long enough to be able to look back and say, the people that made a difference in my life, because, you know, having met them just by being in their presence, I felt like I'd embraced something about that success. And I met some great people along the way. So I thought I'd write a chapter on it.
Well,
that would be great.
My ideal scenario for you to be, if I were, if I were in control, I would love for you to come back for a stint on General Hospital, and then that trigger coming back to Days, so we got you on both shows again. I would love to, come back for a story arc on General Hospital, and then come back as Tony DiMera on Days. I would love, I would love to see you on both shows again. I would love to see that, and so if anyone's listening, they need to do that.
Think there's some spies out there?
Well, oftentimes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
I noticed some of the producers on Days have gone onto my site and they've liked it. And I thought, well, they do visit, but and no, you know, Days, I love my time, all those on and off for 28 years. I love spending time there and the actors that I worked with, and especially Deidre and Joe Muscolo. Drake Hoekstrom was wonderful to work with.
I know Lauren loved you. She has loved working with you, and she's had a chance to work with you.
It was great. And I remember I was standing in the hallway with her the day I was nominated for an Emmy, and one of the actors didn't even congratulate, one of the lead actors on the show, I won't mention the name, didn't even say congratulations. All he said to me was, "You're first, right?" And Lauren turned around and said, "I think he's jealous." I said, "He's happy."
I always thought it'd be fun to see Kate and Tony, or Andre. We had little moments of that over the years, but that would be a fun thing, I think.
Oh yes, I there was a real chemistry between us. I really enjoyed her, and she, you know, both of us would like working with each other. But I don't know, you know, what head writers see or what their story's about. I mean, I still had a year on my contract before they killed me off the last time when the UX producer came on. And I just felt there were so many untold stories.
And
they told me going to be, because one head writer said to me, you know, you really work well with children, I've noticed, and so I'm going to bring you into this story about, I forget the disease the child had, and I said, and you're going to...
Autism.
Yeah, it was autism, right, it was autism.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was great, but it never dealt with anything. And
that's a shame.
And I remember Sherry Anderson, the writer, head writer of Days years ago, she had approached the writer, and she said, what happened to Teo's character? She said, the story was finished. And I went, really?
Right.
So, you know, there are people, you can't make everybody happy. All you can do is go do as best of the work that you can, and that's what I tried to do. And I don't know, maybe it's my confidence, my training, that people thought that, you know, I was too sure of myself and it bothered them. I don't know what it was, because it's not like I fought with actors on set. I never had any problems with the actors. I went and did my work, but I think sometimes, you know, I would upset some directors because their direction was, well, less than adequate. And I remember one director saying to me one day, I want you to go and sit behind your desk. Your mother's going to come in. She's going to sit there. And I said, wait a minute. She's my mother. Why am I going to interview my mother? I don't know anybody who would speak to their mother behind a desk. And he didn't like that. He said, what would you suggest? I said, my mother can come in, and then I get up away from her. I said, it's a sign of respect.
Right.
And if you delineate the character in the way it should be played so that people understand boundaries, they just whip things up, let's finish, go through it, and there's no thought going through, thought process going through it. That's why, you know, sometimes you've got to stand up for your character because you know the character so well after playing it. But But some directors, they didn't appreciate it. I had one director who was so wonderful. He says, anything you want. And I remember Brian DeTillo came barging through the DeMera house, and I turned around and I said, this doesn't make sense. He says, what do you mean? I said, Brian DeTillo's going to barge through, that carriage is going to barge through my house. Where are the bodyguards? We were supposed to be in the fortress here, the DeMera household. How did you just barge through?
Right.
I said, he says, what would you like me to do? I said, I would like you not to take my power away, so that when he comes to the door and I want to bring him in, he said, would you like to do the interview, the entire scene at the door? I said, well, unless you want to do it outside, but unless you give me permission to say to him, yes, come in and see what happened. But for him to barge through, I mean, it's not like he was a powerful character. He was a lovely character. I mean, I like Brian DeTillo, but the character was not that powerful to be able to do that. So things like that, you know, breaking boundaries, I was always up against, because then it confuses the audience. Then they think you're weak. Anyway, so that's some of the tales.
Well, we even make cracks about that now. It's like, you know, first of all, nobody ever answers the DeMera door. The actor always has, you know, it's like they have all these people on staff supposedly, but they're the ones always having to go to the door. People just barge in, and you're like, okay, wait a minute. There's like armed guards around the house, yet people just walk up to the DeMera mansion. And
you remember the times when, but there's always been budget cuts. So suddenly I had no more maid, nobody answering the door. And in order to keep up the pretense of being, you know, having an important household, I used to call out butler.
Yeah.
I used to say, where the hell is the butler? And that gave me an excuse to answer the door.
Yes.
I used to improvise things like that.
Yeah.
Butler, where the butler? Okay, and then I'd answer the door.
Mm-hmm.
That's me. You know,
yeah.
And that kind of covered the household, but, you know,
Joe
would always speak up as well. You know, we were very, very protective of, because I always find that when you start doing things that are not part of your character, that seem to take away from the character, in the end, the audience starts losing respect from you unconsciously.
Mm-hmm.
And then the writers think, oh, he's not too strong anymore, or he's weak. But they made you that way. But I always fought that so I could not have you know, Tony or Andre come off as being, you know, a passive character. I mean, who wants to watch a passive character?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, I never played a victim. I never would allow that. Even when they used to write it at times, I didn't. And when James Riley killed me one time after my parents died and they stuck me in a coffin, which I'll never forget, I thought, what a bunch of insensitive pricks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were the times I wasn't happy, but there were times that were very joyous, and Leanne was certainly part of that wonderful fun, and Joe certainly. But I liked working with James. James was great.
Oh, yes. We loved when you and James and Joe were all in scenes together. The whole De Niro family was together. Those were some good times.
Hmm.
We need to start taking callers. We have a lot of people lined up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah, I would start take callers now, yeah.
Okay, Sabina, are you still there?
Yes.
Hey, thanks for holding on.
I'm here.
Okay.
Who is this?
Go right ahead.
Yeah.
Who is this?
Hello, it's Sabina.
Oh, hi.
Hi, I'm actually calling you from Atlanta, the day's charity event. And I wanted to say hi because I'm about to see a whole bunch of your co-stars. It's going to be a blast. Today was the kickoff party, but tomorrow is the big shindig, all three events. So Lauren and James are going to be here. I just heard you talking about James. So it's going to be a blast. And I wanted to say hi because I hadn't talked to you in a while. I hadn't tweeted you. I know you've been busy. So
yeah, you know, sometimes there are some, you know, if I stop answering every, I mean, I try to answer as many as I can.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I end up, you know, I would have had 10,000 tweets by now. So I try to answer as much as I can because people do take their time to acknowledge you, and so I try to do that back. Or sometimes, you know, when people, if it's your birthday or something, people say happy birthday, you can't say thank you to everybody, so you make one tweet that thanks everybody.
Right.
So you have to economize at times.
I know, I understand that, and I appreciate any of the tweets that you've ever tweeted and all the chatting that you have done, and that's why I said, like I said, I wanted to call and say hi, and because I knew you were going to be on tonight. I happened to be available because, like I said, everything's over for tonight. We're just kind of hanging out, waiting to go to bed, and tomorrow will be the big event, three of the different events.
If you see any of my cast that I worked with, will you give them my best?
I sure will. I'm going to see James and Lauren, so I will definitely give them your best.
Such fun memories of those two. James is always terrific, so respectful, always knew his lines, always found it challenging. And I loved Lauren. Lauren was always a lot of fun. I mean, she would rehearse with me so that when we went on set, we knew our lines and give them. I said, let's do this in one take. And and I remember the director saying, you're a bloody athlete, because we used to rattle our lines off. You know, I was a bit on the Speedy Gonzales when it came to lines, because some of the lines where you, if you pause, you'd say, oh my God, what am I talking about? But if you sped them through and you wore some nice clothes, you'd get over it.
Mhm. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to meeting the two of them, and Brian DiTillo's here, and
oh, he is
Ari. Yeah, and Ari Zucker, and Eric, and Sean.
They're all good.
Yeah, so I'm having a blast, and I actually made a scrapbook for Lauren that I'm going to present to her tomorrow, and I'm really psyched about that. It's a fond memory album for her, so complete with co-stars and fans, so I'm really excited about that. And I got a box of chocolates that came from England for James, so I can't wait to give him those.
Oh, how nice. I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
Yeah, we have a British store here in Atlanta called A Taste of Britain. I actually used to know the owner, but she sold the store. So I couldn't get my favorite, which is Quality Street. That's my favorite candy, chocolates from there. But I made do with what I could get, so I could at least have something to give them.
Well, listen, enjoy it tomorrow. tell Lauren I shall always remember our tango.
I will. I will tell her. And we will probably try to tweet you at some point tomorrow as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It was great talking with you.
Great talking to you too, love.
Thanks. Have a great weekend. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Sabina.
Bye. All right. Let's get the next caller on. Okay, and this is Tony.
Tail.
Oh, my
Tony
God.
Tony Singing Eagle Sacramento. How you doing, buddy?
This is what you sound like.
This is exactly what I sound like. I noticed that you don't have an Aussie accent, but we won't go there. But how are you doing?
Oh, my God. You mean I don't say it's a nice day today?
Well, we've been chatting about, actually, several of us have wondered. I mean, I know you're of Greek extraction, but you were raised in Australia, but you have a rather, I don't know, sort of a watered down British accent.
I like to think of it in mind.
Well, whatever it is, it works. I had the same problem I don't mean it that way, but it's like Ian Buchanan had the same thing. He had to modify it so people could understand him. I grew up in the South, so I had to do something. But I am just calling you to say hello. Just to say hello. And behaving.
And with all your lovely comments and your support, and your work and what you do, but you're always, there are some people who have a voice that is always consistently kind.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly, Mr. Singleton, certainly always. So I would say that you have a very good vibration as a human. I always said that. Because, you can't embrace everybody, but occasionally a voice will come through that makes a difference. And, let's face it, most of the people that come on are women. And so it's nice to have a guy come on and give his opinion about things. Women are, most of the time, are very kind, but you've always been tremendously helpful to me as far as your response to things and the fact that you acknowledge some of the things I say. I mean, there are a couple of people who come on Twitter who like to take a jab at you because they want to feel that they told you off or had some effect that was not positive.
Right.
Now that I've learned how to delete those people, because there's no room for that. And, there's just too much chaos going on in our world. It's kind of nice.
And when I first, connected with you, and you, I hope I don't lose it here because you just almost broke me up just now. Wow. I apologize, but I'm almost in tears from what you just said. That's not like me. But anyway, let me pull it back in, be the professional. Hello, I'm back. When we first connected, it was, I told you, I said, I'm sorry, mate. I'm not a fan. I mean, I vaguely remember you from GH, but you're just like one of the neatest people that I've ever run into. And then I had to go back subsequently and say, oh, Days of Our Lives, he's done all these shows, Mission Impossible. And so I sort of had to do my homework to realize, oh, okay, he's been around the block a lot. But when I first met you, you were just a person. And so I related to you as such. And, it's been a wonderful experience because you have no idea what you've done for me personally just through some of your writings and just general writing, general tweets. And so when I respond back, I'm basically saying, yeah, I get it. I know what you're saying because it connects. And I wanted to really thank you for that. But what you just said just totally sent me over the top. So.
Oh, well, thank you. A lot of people will write things, and I think to myself, why don't they contribute something a little more important than generalizations? I mean, who wants to know that you just had a shower? I mean, people write things. I mean, with a platform, you have a platform. How do you feel about life? How do you feel about the circumstances in the world that we're living in? And the generalizations of tweets sometimes, I think people are just so they can be noticed or whatever. But, people who make a difference, when people say things that make you think or want to respond to, because in some way they affect. You can always tell when the voice is coming from someone's inner core or the voice is coming from ego. So when people are coming and they're, I mean, some people will, you know, come on about religion and disagree with you or something and they misunderstand what I was saying. But I used to kind of fight back with it and I thought, no, that's a waste of time. So you allow people to have their expressions and allow them to be who they are, but you don't necessarily have to friend them. But those who, for me, who make a difference and who bring something to the platform is what we should be doing. It's some people make life ordinary and some people make things extraordinary and some people make you think and some people allow you to think later about yourself if you can affect. Because I had a nephew who wrote to me the other day and he's going through a hard time and he wrote this poem. And it's almost, the poem was almost like a blame game. And I wrote underneath, I said, the poem is great, but what about choices? And I was trying to make him understand that we are our choices. And he called me last night and he says, I finally got it. So, you know, words are powerful.
You had, you did a post, you did a post with a photo of the statue.
Yes.
Pieces of life. And all I said was, I get it. And because, yeah, the statue's nice and the artistry and all of that stuff, and yes, the whole concept of love, but we've got, in the midst of all this power to destroy, which we do as human beings so easily for some strange reason, we also have the power to save lives or sometimes to restore lives.
And inspire.
And so I saw that. That's why I said, like, yeah, I get it. Because, yeah.
I like to think that words can inspire. And I remember a teacher of mine said to me, you know, I think you're a snob. And I said, why? Because I may tell somebody that with all the choices they had, that's where they went.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's very important. And words are to educate. Words are there to inspire. Words are there to embrace people, to make people conscious and not take things for granted. Because let's face it, since I've traveled the world and I see how many people have great struggle in life, and we have so much that we're given, taken for granted, that the time that we stand still and start to think and feel is when some tragedy strikes us. When I think, well, why didn't we feel and do things without the tragedy? Why can't we just embrace each other and support each other? Because one person's success has nothing to do with yours. And so, you know, especially in my industry, and you know, in what you do, that people resent when you have success, but they don't realize what it took to get there.
Yeah,
it's not an open success, you know. It's a thing that you were persistent in, something that you believe in, someone that inspired you. So I like to think if I'm going to say something, it means something. And
yeah, and you obviously affect people. I mean, that's a foregone conclusion. About a month ago, I spoke with Tristan Rogers on the phone through one of these shows, and he just, as soon as I mentioned you, I just dropped your name accidentally, and he just, Teo Pingler, he just totally went off. And spoke with, as you know, Sonia Eddy recently, and she said, although you've never worked together, you knew who she was, and that meant a lot to her. So, yeah, we get in a position where we can do an awful lot of good one way or the other, but sometimes we choose to turn left when we should have turned right. And the thing with you is you always sort of show rights over this way, guys. I know you're
But you know, Tony, when somebody writes to me before answering them, I check to see who they are and what it is that their life is about. I do check. I don't just take it for granted. And so when I see, and then I know better how to answer them. Information is power. And, you know, some people just are very glib with things and they don't bother checking out who the person is they're talking to. So whatever information I can get to them, you know, the same with Facebook, before I friend some, you know, accept a friendship, I will find out, I look at this person and see what their life is about. If I'm not in agreement or with someone who's overly religious or pushing the religious button, I kind of become hesitant. And so I don't get into arguments with that. It's like politics, you know. You can't tell somebody, I'm sorry, I disagree because you're a Republican or a Democrat. I try to see what their belief system is about, because then I can answer them with a little more respect. And also, for me, I find that people, by responding that way, are more acceptable with what you say. Even with something I said today about, you know, that we don't love, we'd love to, nobody's ever loved the way they would like to be loved in return. And one woman said, well, Jesus did. I disagree. And I looked at that and I thought, you know what? That's her belief and that's great, and the way she sees love in life. And so I responded and I said to her that that was a good answer, and her response was very positive back. I could have said, you know, oh, please take, you know, I don't want to discuss religion or that Jesus, you didn't even know Jesus. But and then I thought, no, you know, everybody has their own beliefs in the way they see life, and you have to respect that. It's only when people try to, bring you down in a comment, I either ignore those comments or I block that person or I will let it go. I don't have to respond to everything, because some of them are taunting and some of them are there to see if they can affect you because somehow you're a celebrity and so therefore I told him off. So I can see when things come from ego or when things come from your core. And so that's how I respond.
Yeah, like what I said earlier today, I just want to thank you for your friendship and your presence in my life. It is like one of the best things. It's just what the doctor ordered. Trust me.
Well, thanks, Tony. And listen, good luck to all that you're doing. And please keep in touch. And if you ever come to L.A., please let me know. It would be great to meet you. And because, you know, we're all from the same... We came all from the same place, and just because I have a different profession to somebody else's, I'm always interested, and the word is interested, mm-hmm. in how people see life. And because, you know, life's about, it's a learning process, and if someone could give me something I don't know or help me understand something better that I may have been ignorant about, I find that to be profitable. So you take care, and I'll speak to you soon.
No problem.
Right.
Thanks, Tony.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Tony, for calling. Okay. And we'll move on to Angela.
Angela.
Hi, dear.
Hello, dear.
Hi.
Hi, Angela. Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great, especially getting a chance to talk to you. It's been a while, and just thank you so much for coming on and sharing with all of us tonight.
Well, I'm glad you're listening, and now we have a chance to listen to you.
I wanted to ask you a little bit more about your book. I'm really excited about it. And did you have a process by which, I know you've written some plays and so forth with Sherry Anderson, I think, right? So you've done some writing before.
Yeah, scripts.
So have you, I guess what I'm curious about is just, you know, what is your process as far as, you know, do you have a prescribed process of how you've gone about approaching the book, and you write so many hours every day, or?
You know, everybody is different. Some people can write better in the mornings, or they can write better in the evenings or afternoons. I found that the afternoon is a place where I'm quieter. In the mornings, I've got certain rituals in meditation, having my breakfast, looking up on the internet and see what's going on, looking up the news. But as far as the writing, the first thing that comes up for me was one script that we wrote that is now in the hands of a producer was about Schliemann and who discovered Troy. So I read 9 books on the subject. I went to Troy. I went to Schliemann's house in Athens. I tried to find as much as I could. I went through 60,000 documents in 2 weeks, and out of that, I had a foundation. And then I sat down for 3 months by myself and wrote the first draft, and then Sherry came in, and then we polished it. In others, because of the art world I was in, I always liked, because I remember an actress by the name of Claudette Colbert, when I met her when I was 21, and she came into the gallery I was working, and she had 2 of her paintings, one by an artist called Utrillo, and the other one was a Monet. And I remember that they were copying them because in Barbados, the climate was not good for those paintings, so she had them copied, and then she took the real ones, sold them, and then put the fakes up, and nobody knew the difference. So out of that came a concept about a story that I've written called The Big Steal, which is about the faking of a Botticelli. And I was surprised what came out. So I then looked at characters, and I started to think, well, which characters in my life are interesting, and I could use their background as part of the character in the script. And so I try to write as much as I can from real life and then add or subtract what I want, and then I have a story and I have characters. And what's important is if you see a movie and the character doesn't affect you, it means that the character hasn't been fleshed out enough. And somebody read The Big Steal the other day, and she said, I love this script because of how fleshed out the characters are. And when you write from real life, then you can get deeper and deeper into the character rather than making something sound superficial.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I write. The book, you know, because I wasn't going to travel last year, I decided to travel in my mind. And so therefore I decided to sit down and write with my two fingers. And before I knew it, I was writing another story and another story. Before I knew it, I had 22 short stories, and that's what the book is. It's about all the journeys I've taken, and not to say that they're all great, but they were also dangerous. They were also inspiring, and I felt with some of them I had certain revelations by the monasteries or the churches or crossing Sinai and climbing Sinai. So all these books, and I thought one day, and the girls know because they came to see me in Cape May. And when I went on stage for 2 hours to talk about the journeys, I suddenly realized there was an audience out there who were dying to hear about journeys, because a lot of people are couch travelers. They don't journey much. Either they're afraid, they can't afford it, or they didn't realize it would be appealing. And so for me, it's to tell stories and allow people to understand about other cultures. And we can be ignorant about it. And for me to understand how the Middle East and how those people live, I would make sure that I read enough about them so that when I would go into their territory, I didn't go in as an ignorant traveler. I went knowing probably more about their history than they knew. And that was always, people always loved that. And so I made a lot of friends when I was traveling. And so that's what the stories are.
Well, it comes through on Twitter or any time that I've ever seen you interviewed. You just have a natural curiosity about life and people, and I think that's one of the things that people latch on to and, you know, find, you know, just that genuine interest, because it's, you know, there's, you know, it's like what you had said earlier. It's very easy on Twitter, particularly, you know, to just kind of do little shallow comments, and occasionally, I guess we all do, but it is, it's refreshing to be able to see somebody that's really curious about other people and how they feel and those types of things. So it's always an interesting exchange.
Yes, and acknowledge them. You know, people want to be acknowledged. They want to think that what they're saying means something. And, you know, there are some people who write things and nobody responds to them because maybe it's too deep. You know, like some people said, God, that's deep, as if there was something wrong about being deep. And I said today that people are afraid to go deeply because you have to go through pain in order to go through and come out to a revelation. I think those things are very important if we're going to understand why we're here, how others survive, and how they make, you know, I always say, did you make a difference in what you said or how you live? So that's what I try to do. And that's because of the teachers that I've had in all my years. You know, I had a lot of great teachers, and they always demanded that you go deeper. And as an actor, you know, if you just are on the surface, audiences don't understand sometimes why they don't get you. But when you do something that affects them, then they say, ah, this person has something to say that I maybe didn't know about, or reminded them of something they've forgotten. So in that aspect, I try. And let's face it, you know, you have to go deep to understand. Otherwise, it just becomes ordinary and you forget it. The deeper you go, the more you remember. And those journeys I took were always deep because I was very interested in the ancients and how they lived and what they left behind. And that's why I like ruins, because it makes my imagination soar by trying to understand what, you know, if you touch something ancient,
like I have, you try to wonder how these people lived. It's like what archaeologists do, you know. They try to understand how this civilization of people survived and how and even how they dressed, how they ate, how they believed. All those things contribute to understanding a culture.
I always enjoy going to Ellis Island in New York and seeing all the things that people brought over.
Yes.
As a family, because again, it just shows so many different aspects of the culture and just what was important to them, small little things that really reflect a lot of what a person's character is like. So I think it's interesting. I just finished reading an old book. I'm not even sure if it's in print right now, on Joseph Mankiewicz, who was the writer and director on All About Eve.
All About
and,
Eve.
The film, I guess it was 1950 or so.
Yeah.
And Claudette Colbert originally was supposed to play the main character that Bette Davis ended up actually portraying. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, you just don't see today, I don't think, especially in film and certainly and absolutely in television, you don't see writers and directors that often that really are focused on the psychology and the real interest of how women were. I think that was with Mankiewicz and All About Eve and Letters from Three Wives, which is another film that he's done, where he was really focused on what made women tick.
They were a whole different breed. It was a whole different life. They had time to write. They really took their time. Today, it's, you know, it's a whole different ball game. And let's face it, there aren't too many movies that stay with you. It's like going through a Disney ride or Six Flags, and you come out of it and you think, okay, and you go and have dinner. But I like to see a movie that so that when we finish watching at dinner, we start to argue and discuss the film. And that's what I think movies are about. It's to see how they affect you. But, you know, listen, we can only do what we're supposed to do. You can't always please people, and you can't always do it the way people want you to do it as quickly as possible. I don't know how I survived in daytime, but because I had to learn really fast because the lines were so many. And so, you know, you build a foundation over the years, and so you like to think there's conviction in the voice that you're serving an audience and makes a difference. So. But listen, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Nice to talk to you again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Angela. Okay, we're getting there. Here we go. We have Mary on the phone. Thanks for holding, Mary.
Hi, Teo.
Hello, Mary. How are you?
Sir, I want you to know that I am one of your grandest admirers.
Oh, thank you. Where are you from?
Arizona.
Arizona.
Yes.
I've been to Arizona.
We're getting hot here.
I'm sure.
Yes.
I went to the Petrified Forest there.
Oh, okay. That's up north and west. Yeah. I have flown over it. I've never visited it.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, I've got so many things I want to say. First of all, I want to thank you for all of your tweets. Those are so inspirational. And it just seems like there's times when I am so down and I don't know which way to turn. And you will pop up with the tweet that just gives me the answer and the way to go. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
And
I remember Marianne said to me, "You haven't tweeted much lately." I said, "I haven't got anything to say." It's not something that comes, you know, like a routine at breakfast. You know, for me, to tweet something, it means something hits me, and I wanted to say something about the Boston thing, and I couldn't understand why people who've come to this glorious country and have been privileged to live here, to have the kind of freedom and embrace, especially when they've come from a country like Russia, where they have very little freedom, where the government, you know, you can't go out in the streets and protest anything. You're arrested. People disappear. In this country, there is so much beauty in the way we live, and people take for granted. So that when I saw this, I thought, what would make two men who have given so much, have been given so much, and to come in, and then you realize that 14 people lost limbs in this terrible terrible bombing last week, and you think, what is the matter with these people? It's all about education. You know, and I realize when I've traveled into the Middle East and that there's so much lack of education. They don't understand. They think that, you know, that's why I said last week, there are many religions, but in fact, there's really only one, and that's the God religion. We have many ways of getting there. It's up to you to reach that point in the way that you can. But when you are not educated, when you don't understand how other cultures and what they believe in, I mean, they think that everybody in this country is, you know, driving around with millionaire cars and everything, which is not true. There are a lot of poor people in this country, a lot, millions. And yet, you know, when this country, when people have great trauma, how many people come to their rescues? How many people donate? How much they give? Where on earth, on any place on this earth, is this done as well as it's done in America? And that's why I became an American citizen in 2008, because I so believed in this country and I felt very fortunate being here.
Okay, now here's a big question.
Yes.
Is there any chance in the future that you would actually put together a trip, a travel trip, and be the guide? Hello? Are you there? Hello?
Tana dropped.
What happened?
Tana dropped. You know what happened, though? I saw they were having earthquakes in L.A., so I'm not sure. Maybe something happened.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, geez.
Okay. Yeah, there was just I wasn't even on that page, so I didn't hang up on them. I'm sure Rose didn't either. Okay.
Oh,
well,
what? Summer.
Yeah, we'll just see if you pop back in. Maybe.
No, I wasn't on that page either, so.
Yeah, I wasn't on it. Could someone keep an eye on Twitter and see if there's something else going on with the earthquake?
Okay. Should I stay on the program?
Yeah. Yes. If you wanted to,
stay on.
That's fine, Mary. Yeah.
Here, I was scared to call in, and now I've got a ton of questions.
Yeah, and after Mary, we'll have Jan, Nikki, Jessica, and Dama.
Oh, that's a shame.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, Mary.
Hi, Tao.
Tao, you're supposed to mess up again. Tao?
Doing the same thing it did before.
Yeah, I'm going to hang up on them again. I can call back in. Okay, let's call back in. At least it's okay to call back.
I hope it wasn't a bad earthquake. I didn't feel anything here, and usually if they're big ones, we get a little bit of a shake here.
Oh, here we go again.
Hello?
Tao?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I got you.
I'm sorry.
We lost you.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
You have an earthquake over there, someone said?
What's that?
You have an earthquake there?
I don't think so.
No? No, okay.
People are tweeting there's earthquakes going on in California.
Well, I haven't felt any. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay.
Hey, sorry about that.
That's okay. Maybe I'd said something that pissed you off. Anyway. Is there any chance in the future that you would consider putting together a travel trip? Because if you do, I would definitely want to be on board.
You know, when we discussed it yesterday, I thought it would be a great idea is to get, you know, as many as we can together and see where people would really like to go. And
wonderful.
And, you know, I mean, you know, Greece is a wonderful place to go, and so is Italy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I liked I mean, I love the Middle East, but, you know, for Americans today, it's not always so safe. But, like, that's Jordan is fantastic because, you know, I would love to take people across the Jordanian desert into Mount Nebo, oh, where Moses had died, and then go into Petra and go through Petra and also go into a desert called the Wadi Rum Desert, where Lawrence Arabia went through and won the battle with the Turks at the time. That's one country. Maybe even go to Israel and go to Jerusalem, I thought would be wonderful, you know, to do, and the whole group of us, and get you into the Orthodox, Greek Orthodox Church where the Christ child was born, and, you know, things like that. I thought, you know, that could be a wonderful thing to do, and get a group of us and do a journey that we can all cherish.
Mm-hmm. I would be on board if you did it.
When the book comes out, you know, for those who will read it, you'll see some of the journeys. And then maybe, you know, people can say, I would love to go and experience that area where you went. So everybody will have a different kind of passion. I know that a lot of people would like to go to Israel, to Jerusalem. But I'd also like to, the good thing is you say, okay, what's nearby? And you say, okay, you can travel by car across this bridge and you end up in Jordan. So, you know, to be in areas where is historic but at the same time safe, especially for Americans. You know, Greece would be wonderful. You know, we could do some wonderful story. We can even do a documentary on it, I thought.
You know, I said something about that in one of my...
You
are? I had indicated in one of my comments that doing the documentary while you're on the journey with us would be awesome.
Yes. That would be really, I think, a fascinating thing to do. You know, let's think about it, and I certainly would be up to it.
See, next year, I'm going to Africa and Istanbul this summer, so I'm going to be this summer.
I love Istanbul. I've been there a few times. I mean, there's some wonderful things to see, and and to go to Ephesus, and to go to, there's a church that the Virgin Mary had supposedly spent her last days. It's a wonderful church, and when you go into this little church with hundreds and hundreds of candles burning, there is a portrait of a monk who, in the 16th century, had this image came of the Virgin Mary for him, and he drew her. And that drawing is on the wall there, framed. And it's things like that, you know, where when Christ was supposedly, had said to John, who was the only disciple of all of them who didn't have a terrible death, he ended up going to, at the time, which was Constantinople, and he took Mary with him. And I remember going to where they found his burial site, and there is kind of a grate on top of it where you stand and feel the energy coming through from him. I mean, there's so many special things, you know. Huh?
I said, I just got goosebumps all over.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, it's not about a Christian. To me, it's about invention and understanding other religions, because then we'd go to a mosque and see, you know, in Istanbul, you go to St. Sophia, and understand how that church was built in the 6th century AD, and the reason why it survived all the earthquakes, because it's octagonal in shape. So the architect, who was Greek and who had built it, understood, and because that area has the same kind of earthquake zone as we do here in California.
Wow.
So there's a lot of things. So to me, it's about... Everybody, you know, you're saying to me, all right, all of those who want to go, let me tell me where it is you would, where is your life dream to go to? And we'd look at all the places and say, okay, let's do this, this, and that. And, it, you know, it's, traveling is not cheap, as you know. But the thing to do it is, you know, we will have a guide as well to take us, because it's always good to have a guide from that country so that we feel safe, so that they also understand the language, so that we don't have misinterpretations of things. But, yeah, that would be a great idea.
All right. One last thing, and I'll let you go. I had a lot of other questions, but I know there's other people. I just want to let you know how much I enjoy Teen Tale, the group, on Facebook.
Yeah, Laurie's doing a good job.
Laurie is just doing a fantastic job. And I just love all the pictures she's posting. That banner she's got now is just, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, well, yes.
I'm infatuated.
I sent her a lot of photographs. Well, so, yeah, that's
I'll let you go.
All right, sweetie. Take care, and thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, we'll get on Jan, and then we'll get Jessica. Jan?
No, this is Jan.
Hi, Nicholas. Ryan.
Oh, my God. It's so dangerous.
Here we go.
Dora.
So you found your voice.
I did, I think, you know. It takes a time. I mean, I don't jump into things and say, oh, I got it. I have to discover it. And that, when that voice comes through, as I say in one of my speeches, you know, we have to stop and listen to that deepest inner self. And when we know that, then because we talk about, I say to the people that, you know, that God didn't abandon us. He didn't leave us. We abandoned him. And about the inner voice. So, it's not something that's readily available to us. It's something we have to earn in order to reach it. And when we do, it's not always easy. And a lot of people don't always want to hear, oh, that's too deep for me or whatever. But I love the dinner table conversations I have with people at my house or at other people's houses because the only thing that sometimes people want to get their stories in or they don't listen to what you're saying. For the priest, you know, not. I mean, I played a monk in the theater at the Gatton here in Los Angeles. I played a priest, but he was a fake priest when I did mission. But to actually be a priest and to understand the movements, when I played the monk at the Gatton, I remember a friend coming in previews and saying, "Love your performance, but I still don't believe you're walking with God." And I thought, what the hell does that mean? So I had to do a lot of searching. And opening night, something happened and something clicked. And that friend of mine, an actor, came back and said, "You found him." So I can't say that because I found him then, I understand it now. It's not something that is just there at a press of a button. It's a different priest. It's a different time. And so I have to discover it through going to the church, listening to music, reading the different sermons that Catholic priests do. I watch their movements. I put on the dress. And then suddenly something shifts and then the voice is different. And then I'm comfortable with it. And let's face it, you know, to play a priest is to say that you are the direct connection to God for people.
Yeah.
And
you do, though, because you put your heart and soul into it.
Yeah, and you have to. The trick to it all is to enjoy it. You have to love.
Well, that definitely comes across. That's why we all enjoy you so much, because you enjoy it. And it shows.
Yeah.
It's something you and I have in common. I'm a one checker, too, so. That's how I type. One finger.
How's your husband?
He's good. He's here. He's in the background.
Oh, I'll give him my best.
Good evening, Dale.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Is she behaving?
Oh, yeah.
Never. Telling a lie. Bless his heart.
Oh, God, you guys are so funny. So are you taking good care of yourself?
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. Most definitely. Have to. So do you have a good cocktail in front of you tonight?
Yes, I poured myself a tequila.
Lime,
ooh.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes. I poured myself
a tequila. Sounds
lime, and I'm having it on the rocks as I'm talking. And I just wanted to be able to relax and, you know, let's face it, one's mouth does rattle on much better after you've had a drink.
A little loose lips, maybe.
You're doing
yeah.
fine.
You know, that's what they should do. You know, when the police are confronting someone, they should give them a drink.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
He should.
Yes,
yes, we all relax the drink, don't we?
That's what these ladies do with your perfume.
What, intoxicate?
Yeah.
Oh, my. I have one question.
Yes, honey.
Is your poker broken?
My poker broken.
Marianne knows what I'm talking about, don't you, Marianne?
Mm-hmm.
Is some kind
Facebook.
Of game?
Is your Facebook poker broken?
No, it's not broken at all. It's in good hands.
Oh, okay.
You
well,
can't find it, that's all.
All right.
Your face like you always do to ours.
Well, thank you, honey. And you be well.
Yes, you too. Have a wonderful evening.
Wonderful. And to your lover, I give my best as well.
An abundance of love to you, Mr. T.
Thank you, honey. You take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jan. Hi, Jan. That's funny.
Okay,
lover.
And I'm with Jessica. Hi, Jessica.
Hey, you guys.
Woo, you made it.
Cocktail is talking. How are you?
Well, I have the speaking stick now.
Well, let me ask you, since you've been listening, does it sound like we're, what's the expression? Does it sound like we're normal people?
Describe normal.
Like you've come into a midnight party and everybody's just letting loose.
I think everybody's just letting loose.
Well, let's face it, you know, we have to laugh and have fun. I mean, there's enough seriousness going on in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have some fun.
Yes, here now.
Yes.
So the party's just starting now, right, Jessica?
Indeed it is, Marianne. Indeed it is.
Oh, so do you have anything to ask me?
Well, I actually can't think of anything because this is my first time talking to you, Teo. I've spoken to Leanne, but I was just a little bit nervous because I'll go on and be blunt. I have had a huge crush on you since I first saw you on Days when you came back in 2002.
Was I with Leanne then? No, I wasn't. Or was I? No. I can't even remember. What was I doing when I came in 2002?
That was the Penthouse Grill return.
Penthouse Grill.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. That was, with all those pages. I'll never forget it. I think I had a 7-page monologue. At the end, because I remembered all my lines. It was, you know, to come back, even many times as I've come back, you know, you have to find the rhythm again with the character. But that was a good story. I mean, that was a good writer. He was the guy who was from Y&R at the time. I thought he really got me. What I liked about him was he did his homework and he went back to the 80s and said to me, I want to write some of that stuff again, all that fun stuff. But, you know, every writer has a different concept and not all of them have a sense of humor. Some of them are far too serious or take themselves far too serious. Listen, you know, every time I've come back, most of the time it's been, you know, really terrific. And it was a good cast and the crew were wonderful and the writers were great. But, you know, I was always surprised when they decided to call me off again. I thought, what did I do this time? But I didn't always trust who I was working with because I know there was a bit of a history I heard later about people backstabbing each other. And it was not an easy time, but most of the time, and I would say 90% of the time, you know, some of the greatest memories I've ever had, and Ken Corday was certainly always, for me anyway, he was very generous and always appreciative. But, you know, as in writers came, James Riley was the only one who liked me really a lot in the beginning, and then somebody, which I'm writing in the story of the book, somebody backstabbed me, and someone went and told him that I'd said that the scripts were terrible and I hated working for him, and he just got really upset, and he turned on me from then on. So every time he left and I went back, and then he'd come back and he'd kill me off, and then he'd be gone, and then I'd come back. So it became it was like every time I came on the show, then he would come back. I always knew I was gone. So I never felt appreciated, because I did work hard. I mean, I'm not an actor who, like some actors, would go in the mornings and learn their lines that morning. I could never do that. I'd work all weekend. I had no personal life after that. I just would study all the time. And so the work ethic was very important, and I was paid well to do the best work I could do, and most of the time it was appreciated. And but you know, it's a serial, and it's their prerogative with who they want to write. Some people can write better for others, some people are not worldly or sophisticated, so they wouldn't know how to write as well for the Demeras. But I think James is a great Demera. I thought Joe's always been great. So all in all, the memories for me are terrific. I mean, I don't have any complaints. I'm sorry that James Riley died, because, you know, he wrote a big canvas. And but I miss the crew. The crew were great, because they were always my barometer. But anyway, to your question, you didn't have a question.
Not so much, but I will say that my favorite part was when you and Leanne both came back.
Yes.
Because, you were both my favorite. But y'all were also very reminiscent of all the classic movie star couples from back then, and I'm a film student, so that really kind of really clicked once the two of y'all came back. And to me, that was just probably the best time for me when I watch Days. I don't watch it anymore, but it was my favorite part.
Well, you know, chemistry is not always available, and it depends on how one person approaches another. If a person doesn't come out with judgments, or and they're open to the experience and willing to see how well they can do it, then it makes a big difference. Leanne was certainly that way. We hit it off from the beginning, and also it was fun. Lauren was another one who was always fun. James was always fun. Joe, you know, I remember the day when he slapped me so hard across the face, which was not in the script. And I was so pissed off. I saw stars. And, you know, I remember turning my head and I wiped his slap off my face with my hand. But he apologized later. But, you know, it was very effective. And that way, you know, I like standing up to Joe, because Joe's a very strong actor, and he was challenging. You know, some actors are not. Some actors, you know, you have to elevate the scene with. But he certainly was one that was challenging. James was very good that way, too. And I think it's very important that when you have to understand what the characters are and where the boundaries lie. And you know, it's always good. You go in, the actors love working with you, or you like working with them, and it's a give-and-take situation. Some, you know, come in just to do their stuff, and they're gone. It doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything to them. It always mattered to us, to Joe, especially those who came from the old school of acting. We were taught to care about what we said and what we did. The craft was very important. So, but anyway, thank you very much for coming on board. And
I think that's kind of important anyway, because, I mean, it makes the scene believable when both the actors are, you know, emotionally and mentally invested in it, I guess is how you would word it. Because if it's not there, then the scene just goes flat to me.
Yeah, part of the problem is, you know, learning that many lines overnight or over the weekend is tough. And if you can get the lines down, then you can add another stage to the work. But if you're only dealing with the lines, that's when you realize that you're not growing out of the scene, you're just staying on the same level. So So the writers always liked actors who took the dialogue off the page and made it into something they weren't expecting.
Right.
Yeah. So,
Do have a question for you now, but I will make it quick. Are you having chocolates with your tequila?
No. Oh, no. I the one thing I do know is I would never have chocolate and tequilas. I would have a beer with tequila, but I can't do that. I wouldn't be able to have this conversation. I'll have a drink, one drink. I don't have any more than that, but occasionally I'll have, a couple of martinis when I go out for dinner. But these days, I make sure when I drive that I've only had one drink because they're really on you here. So, and also it's a responsibility, for you driving in this city because people get crazy with where they want to change lanes, and you never know who's walking across. People sometimes don't walk across the line. I haven't even had my dinner yet, so I'm going to cook some fish tonight after I finish talking, and then get back to my lines because I start working on Thursday.
Oh, you have a new project coming up?
Yes, I start next week. It's called Job's Daughter with Eric Roberts and Doris Roberts, and I'm playing a priest.
Oh,
nice
fun.
Yeah, it's a nice role. I saw the outfit. I'm going to wear that, suit with the white collar most through the movie, but at the end of the movie, during a celebratory time, I'm going to have, one of those robes, and oh, my God, and we'll see how all that is, but yeah. So I'm excited. I'm excited about that. So thank you for coming on board, my love.
I enjoyed talking to you immensely.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed the conversation, too.
Thanks, Jessica.
Well, congratulations on the book, and I'm going to pass the speaking stick to the next person.
Thank you. You
my
take
Jessica.
Care.
Bye.
Okay. We have two more people. I'm going to bring on Dama. Dama. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, my Hi. God.
Hi.
Oh, my, you cheeky thing.
Hi,
Hi,
Anna. Hi, Rose. Hello, Teo.
Hello, Dame. Isn't this late for you?
No, dear. I'm just up in Seattle, so we're on the same time zone.
Okay.
Not bad.
How's your family dealing with Syria?
They're hanging in there. We don't hear much. It's kind of hit or miss. So far, they're okay, but Damascus is pretty hot, as usual. So a little precarious for my husband's youngest sister and her husband. But they're hanging in there. So,
I watched the news the other night and saw what they did to that mosque in Aleppo, the Umayyad Mosque,
Yeah.
Imagine, you have this tower that is 1,000 years old and those sons of bitches blew it to bits.
I know.
And this is what I don't understand with all their fighting for their religion. I don't understand how they can kill people in mosques, how they can destroy their heritage. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
It makes no sense to me. I mean, I went to Aleppo. It's an extraordinary, it's one of the great cities in the world when it comes to ancient history. And the fact that they blew this tower and it's what it looks like. First, I thought it was the Umayyad Mosque in Damascus, which is one of the most beautiful I've ever seen. And I love them. I love walking into mosques. I love watching the way they pray. I love the whole ceremony that they do. And it's just, I don't understand. It's such a contradiction. How do you speak to Allah, and then how do you then bomb a sacred space like that? I don't understand. And then your own people. I just don't understand it. I just don't. And having been to Syria, I'm just sad that that country, which is one of the oldest existing countries in the world, I mean, when it goes back, it's one of the great first civilizations, and what they're doing to it. And how, when I was writing my book on Syria, the journey, last year it was 9,000 had died. We're over 70,000 now. I mean,
It's probably actually much higher than that, but yeah, that's that's a pretty good estimate, yeah.
Yeah, I don't understand.
I don't think we'll ever really know how many. But, yeah, it's tragic. It's just sickening. I don't know. We just hope that they stay safe every single day. We, you know, there's nothing we can do. We're stuck here, and we are not welcome there, and there's nothing we can do. We just, but they're used to lying low, and, you know, they're in the minority because his family is Orthodox, so, you know, of course, they're used to it. So,
but why do they, how can they do, what I don't understand, I mean, even in Egypt, where they're blowing up Christian places and burning them, I just don't understand why people find other people's belief systems threatening. I mean, let's face it, if you're really solidified with your own God, I don't understand why you can't look at somebody else and accept them for what they believe in, because it's all about choice. So I don't understand that. And that really comes down to education.
Yeah, it really does. And I think not everyone feels that way. You know, most people there are just like all of us, and they just want to live their lives, and they're just trying to get by day to day. You know, my husband's neighborhood was mixed. There was Muslim families living there, and you know, Orthodox neighbors. So, you know, I don't know, but it does come from a place of ignorance, most definitely, and just pure evil, really, and power. It's about power and money and everything. So it's just terrible. But
God, you think, you know, we haven't advanced. I mean, I say in the screenplay that man has not changed. He's still brutal, and he's still dishonest, he's still greedy. I say this in a sermon, and it's so true. I mean, here we are 2,000 years later since, I mean, you know, there have been so many, for each religion, somebody has come through to pinpoint the belief system in that particular state. And I don't understand how they just, you know, you look at something ancient, like in Egypt, and you go to an area called, in ancient Cairo, called Babylon, and you have the Coptic churches, why they would try to burn those places and kill the people. You're going, this is your heritage. I mean,
yeah.
It's just, anyway, I don't mean to be getting into a serious subject, but are you well? Everybody's well? Your baby, everything good?
Yeah, everybody's well. She's wonderful. Yeah, she's just a joy, and so smart and sweet and kind and funny and spontaneous, everything. And she just turned 2, so she's quite busy. And, everyone's mostly well. Grandma's not so well. She's 94, and, I think it's her luck. Her time has run out, so we're getting close. She had a surgery and didn't fare so well afterwards, so it is what it is. It's part of life, unfortunately. So, but, yeah, everyone else is well.
David, thank you so much for coming on board. I just realized I've been talking for an hour and 3/4.
Right.
So let me get some other people who are waiting, but keep in touch, and thank you always.
You're welcome, Teo. You too. Congratulations.
All right.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Dama.
Bye,
Dama.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Last two is Nikki and Miranda.
Nikki.
Yes.
Hi, Teo.
Hi, honey. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's so nice to talk with you again.
It's been a while.
It has. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, actually. I mean, you know, I've got a lot to deal with right now. I've got a sister who, because, you know, I saw her last year the first time in 3 years, and she's going through some physical stuff that is not great right now, so I'm a bit concerned. So I wanted to go back home, but I can't right now, and because she lost her husband 2 years ago to dementia. And so, you know, it's one of those times, good times, you know, life, you know, every time I think, oh, life's going well, I say to myself, oh, don't say that, because then suddenly life says, oh, really? Smack. So I try to just, you know, move along with everything and make sure that I'm in present with the things that I'm doing, and do as good a job as I can do. And but I do miss my family. I must say that is not being away from them for so many years. I've kind of missed out in some way, because, you know, when it's all said and done, the only thing left really is your family.
That is
true. So, but otherwise, everything's good. I love meeting with the editor today. She just sent me an email, I noticed, and she was thrilled and with what we're doing. And she's going to edit some of the stories, but she liked the voice in the stories and excited. And so we'll see. And I'm thinking, you know, when the book comes out, I'll probably go for a tour around different places and talk about journeys. And because, you know, let's face it, it's not safe. All these places I've been to are not safe anymore.
Mm-hmm. Come to Chicago, Tail. I'll make sure you're safe. Don't worry.
Oh, I'm sure you'll take me to a nice Greek restaurant.
I will. I have a question about the editing you just mentioned, but before I ask my question, I want to say thank you again for posting that birthday message on my Facebook. You know, it always brightens up my day when you do that.
Well, listen, I must say you girls have been terrific to me over the years, and very generous and supportive and interested. You know, you can't take those things for granted. So thank you as well. And you gals have always been generous to me on my birthday, and I'm always surprised. And I remember when the package came at my last birthday, and friends came in, they said, "What's that?" And I said, "Oh, it's from some of the girls." They said, "What do you mean? People send you things?"
The harem.
Oh, yeah.
That's the harem.
The harem. Yeah, the harem.
I said, must have done something right. I said, "Yeah, they did, you know."
Aww. Well,
yes.
Tail, my question is, because you were talking about your writing process earlier, and as a writer myself, I was just wondering, what do you think is the most challenging part of writing a book? Because I'm sure the editing can be very tedious.
Yeah, I kind of, what I do is as I write, and when I finish it the next morning, to me, writing is about trying to find, when you finish for that day, it's like the door closes. And the next day, you have to open that door again in order to get into that story. It's not like something comes automatically.
Mm-hmm.
It's about reaching within yourself to get back into the passage. So I read the piece over, and suddenly so I begin to edit by myself. And even the editor said to me today, she says, you really, this flows very well. I said, that's because I edit as I go along. But some days, it may take me 2 hours to get in. Some days it's like 5 minutes and I go, okay, I'll do this. Other days I can't get in it. So it depends on what's flowing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like the story I'm doing about days, I'll say, oh, I went there, and then I write the list of things down. But in the journeys, it's like free flowing. I just write as I go along and as I tell the story. And because it's about flow, it's not about manipulation. It's not trying to sound good, or it's not trying to, because I've had so many great experiences, it's not difficult for me to find adventures in what I've done. But the thing is sometimes, where do I go from this to that? So it must flow that way. So I said, how do I get into the day story? Where do I start? And I thought, because this story is about journeys, I started in an area in Cuba, and then found my way from the phone call from Ken to go into days. But at least I started with the journey and brought that into it. And then I started to write about James Riley, and I found myself, you know, thinking, oh, I can't say this or I can't say that. And then I said to myself, you know what? Why don't I just let it flow through? I write what I really think. And then when it comes to the editing, I can then say, when I've seen the whole picture, then I'll say, you know what, I don't want to say this. I don't want to upset somebody. I don't think this needs to be said about this person. And if I want to say about something about somebody, I will change it to another name. Or if I talk about a particular thing that's funny that could embarrass another actor, you know, like, you know, quite a few of the actors wear platform shoes. I don't say who, but there was one very funny story. So I don't mention the actor's name, or I don't mention the producer's name. Like, there's one producer, I said when he walked down the hall, I thought to myself as he slithered down that if he was an actor, he should play Iago. But I don't mention the producer's name.
Well, that's that very respectful, so, you know.
Well, you know, there's nothing mean, but at the same time, you know, do you lie about your truth? So the trick is, how far can you go, and does it make a difference in the story if you mention this? So when you've got 28 years of telling a story of a place you worked in, you can't play the blame game or the victim. And so I just let it, the trick for me is letting it flow and see where it goes. It's like a recipe. You say to yourself, I'm going to make a chicken soup tonight. So what does it take to make a chicken soup? So you pull in all the ingredients. But what do you add first and what do you add last? Or what do you add in the middle? Or how do you make it where it's going to be your own interpretation? Because there are many ways to make chicken soup, as there are many ways to tell a story. So that's how I found myself working. And Sherry Anderson helped me a lot in the beginning. What she used to say to me is, with all the years I've written, I've never had your imagination. So for me, one thing I had was I always had a certain imagination. And that's how I work. And I challenge myself. And if I get bored, I then decide to let it go, because something along that, you know, when you get bored, it's because somewhere along the line you've either lied, not told the story correctly, and or you've held back. Flow only comes when you're telling your truth.
That's very interesting. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Well, you do well, Nikki. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. I wish you luck on your book and your movie, and I'll see you around Twitter and Facebook, love.
Yes, and you'd be one of the people I'd love to go on a journey with.
Me too.
Thanks, Nikki.
Okay.
Bye, girls.
Bye. Okay, last one. We have Miranda. Hi, Miranda.
Hi.
Hi, Miranda.
Hi. So luckily I don't have anything super intelligent to say, but I really love your work, and I'm a huge fan, and out of questions besides just your future work, which you've already talked about. So.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, listen, thank you for taking your time. I mean, you know, it is Friday night, and... But you know what, for me, what's great about it is it brings kind of a closure to certain things, so that we go on to the next level that's there for life, for all of us, in the way we speak with each other, the way we ask questions, and do we get the answers we want. But what it is about is it's like we all met in a watering hole, and at that core is something that we all appreciated, me playing it and you watching. And over the years, you've built up that trust with people. And also, always remember to appreciate that people took the time to be part of the dance. And, you know, I never take that for granted. And if I do, someone should tell me. But I don't think I do. I try to. I mean, there's always, you know, a few people around me, including Marianne and Carrie, who will say to me, uh-uh. You know?
They do that.
Privacy is very important. So, but you know, I think that we're still talking about the work that I finished 3 years ago is really, it touches me that people still remember, because in some way something you did was well appreciated, and those people are willing to come back to still be interested in what else you're doing. So my philosophy is this. When you do something, do it as well as you can, because when it's over, it's over. But what people end up having left are the memories and how you affected them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Excellently put.
So thank you very much for coming on board. I'm now going to go and cook my dinner. It's late because usually I eat early, but I then get to my lines. But we'll do this again, after I finish the film. I'm hoping to do another one in August, if all goes well, in Rome.
Oh, great.
Yes, cool. I'm excited about that too, but we'll see. I've always wanted to go back into the films, and it seems to be starting.
Great.
And I want to go and do some more theater. I even spoke to Kate May, and I told them that I'd like to come back, and they said they'd love to have me back, but I wanted to do Gaslight. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah, if you need to do more theater. Wow. Most definitely, yes.
Definitely.
Yeah. So thank you all.
Take care, Teo. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Teo. Thank you.
Thanks,
so much.
Teo.
Yeah.
We love
you. It was fun.
Love you. Was it okay? Everything good?
Oh, we've loved it. It's been so much fun.
Oh, we loved it.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Love hearing your voice.
It was a great night.
Great. Thank you.
Thank
you. And I'll speak to you tomorrow.
Care.
Much love to both of you, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Take
okay.
Care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye, Teo.
Bye-bye.
Bye.